I'm Dan Restrepo at the Center for American Progress. I'm the director of the Americas Project here at the Progress at the center, and like to welcome you all to our call. Also joining me on the call is Russ Crandall, who's a visiting fellow with the Americas Project at the center, and a associate professor of political science at Davidson College. Most pertinent to this call, Russ has also published several books on the hemisphere. Recently, Gunboat Democracy, U.S. Interventions in the Dominican Republic, Granada, and Panama, and the soon-to-be-published second edition of Driven by Drugs, U.S. Policy Toward Colombia. The Americas Project here at the center focuses on the U.S. relationship with and place in the Americas. Obviously, the president's upcoming trip to the Americas presents a very good opportunity to look at where the U.S. stands vis-a-vis our neighbors to the south and where the president's policy has been and is headed with respect to the more than 300 million people with whom we share the Western Hemisphere. As you all know, yesterday the president gave a preview speech of his trip to the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And I was struck by a number of things that the president said. In speaking, he discussed the need for transparency in government throughout the hemisphere. And I think it's important to apply that standard to his own speech and to the policies that he has put forward toward the Americas. Yesterday, the president rolled out a social justice theme with respect to U.S. policy towards the Americas for the first time in the course of his 7 years in office. I was struck by two pieces of, I guess, conventional wisdom or forming conventional wisdom with regard to the president's speech. One, that it represented some sort of major shift in U.S. policy or the emphasis of U.S. policy in the region. And the second is that the other piece of conventional wisdom that I'd like to address is that the president trip to the hemisphere is necessarily a good thing. To go to the first piece, that that the U.S. has somehow shifted the emphasis of its policy, I think if you actually stop and look at the numbers that the president in the president's budget and his most recent budget request for fiscal year 08, they tell a very different story. Counter-drug assistance to Colombia remains the biggest ticket item at nearly $367 million for FY 08 out of a total of $1.4 billion for the region. The administration has proposed cutting development assistance by 25% from FY07 numbers to FY08. Child health and survival assistance also cut by 23% between those 2 years. Things that aren't particularly in keeping with the social justice rubric. The president also, as a point of emphasis, the White House, Stephen Hadley yesterday, and the president is talking about how important the hemisphere is to the Americas, and they're right. The Americas are incredibly important to the United States, and they have been. The president recognized this 7 years ago as a presidential candidate when he spoke in Miami and said that Latin America would be a centerpiece of his administration. But the last 6 years of governance have not borne that out. And another set of numbers that I think starkly underscores the level of neglect or lack of importance or other priorities for the administration is that during the president's trip to the hemisphere, 6 days that he will spend between Thursday and next Wednesday morning, the United States will spend more money in Iraq during those 6 days than the president has proposed spending in all of fiscal year 08 in the Western Hemisphere. The voluntary war, the war of choice in Iraq, has distorted U.S. policy in the hemisphere and elsewhere, but I think it's important to keep that in mind. Also, I'm struck by what the president won't do and isn't talking about doing on his trip. The first, there's two relationships that need to be done right for the U.S. to have its house in order in the Americas. One is Brazil and the other is Mexico. The president obviously is going to both of those countries, and he's starting down the right path in both of those countries, but he's not going nearly far enough. With respect to the ethanol agreement that there is being talked about with Brazil, the fact that the ethanol tariff, the United States 54-cent ethanol tariff, is not on the table is wrongheaded. We need to begin to reduce that tariff, if not eliminate it entirely, to create the kind of alternative market for ethanol that it needs to be able to compete against carbon-based fuels. And with respect to Mexico, we have a very complex relationship vis-a-vis Mexico that extends well beyond immigration, but at the moment it's being held hostage to the way the immigration debate has been conducted here in the United States. The president is going to, again, talk a good game in all likelihood about the need for comprehensive immigration reform, But what he needs to do is come home and use whatever political capital he has left to actually move the ball forward and get that deal done in the United States Congress, so we can move on to the issues underlying the relationship between the U.S. and Mexico. Again, if we can get Brazil and Mexico correct, we can go a long ways towards getting U.S. relations with the hemisphere back on track after the 6 years of neglect and mismanagement we've seen. And finally, if the president is serious about the social justice and aspect of U.S. policy towards the hemisphere that he talked about so much yesterday, he should take a long, hard look towards supporting Senator Menendez's proposal to create a social investment fund for the Western Hemisphere. The proposal has been out there for several years. The administration has not done much, if anything, to support its moving forward. And again, if social justice is the cornerstone of U.S. policy or is to become the cornerstone of U.S. policy towards the hemisphere, meaningful social investment in the hemisphere is crucial, not just rearranging programs that already exist and putting a new label on them. With that, I will turn things over to Russ before we turn things over for questions.
Great. Thanks, Dan. And I'll make my comments brief so that we have ample time for questions. But I think in terms of playing off Dan's last point about the social justice agenda for this trip, it's a little bit interesting. I remember back when President Clinton was in office, and one foreign policy observer criticized his administration for conducting a sort of foreign policy as social work. That seems like we've come full circle in terms of seeing the Bush administration emphasize this social level. And again, as Dan pointed out, something that up until this point has been virtually absent from the hemispheric agenda, and certainly from the president's stage rhetoric on his vision for the Western Hemisphere. I think this plays into a larger point about the diminished expectations of the Bush administration in Latin America. And as we all recall, when President Bush took office, promising a new era in hemispheric relations, he was going to focus first and foremost on creating good neighbors in the hemisphere, and the subsequent years of how that has completely unraveled. And so I think when President Bush visits key countries such as Brazil, Mexico, Colombia, if anything, his goal is just to demonstrate that he can arrive and be welcome in these countries, as opposed to others where that might be more difficult, such as Venezuela. So it's unfortunate that it come to that. But if we recall the episodes such as the second UN resolution, the run up to the Iraq war, with the pressure at the United Nations Security Council and two rotating members, Chile and Mexico, and the very negative response that that move garnered in the two respective countries, or the ill-fated attempt to back a former president of El Salvador for the OAS Secretary Generalship position, again, one that looked, appeared to many Latin Americans, both citizens and governments, that the Bush administration had one policy for Latin America, and that's either you're with us or against us. And so I think the president's going to have a lot of work to do to convince his counterparts, and certainly the broader populations, that this is a genuine agenda that he is unveiling, that it's not cynical. I think also it's important to understand that for the president, it's an important objective to demonstrate, especially vis-a-vis Hugo Chavez, that he is able to work with democratic, left-leaning democratic leaders, such as, at least in the case of this visit, of Brazil's Lula and Uruguay's Vasquez. So that's certainly something that you'll see a lot of, are the photo opportunities showing these leaders together, and that Bush doesn't just have his ready allies, such as President Uribe in Colombia. In terms of how this plays out, I think again it's just an indication of how low the bar is in terms of what we're expecting, given that up until recently throughout the region, President Bush has been seen as a toxic presence. And what a departure this was from President Clinton and the way that many had expected U.S. relations to evolve in the post-Cold War era. As Dan mentioned, the president, and as you all know, the president will be stopping off in Colombia, and this comes at a very delicate time in the relationship, as Dan mentioned. The lion's share of assistance the United States sends the region goes to Colombia, intended for counter-narcotics operations, as well as strengthening the Colombian military. And given Colombia's continued dire security situation, this is an important bilateral engagement on the part of the United States, beginning with Plan Colombia at the end of the Clinton administration, to work the ways to fill these vacuums of impunity, lawlessness, violence, that unlimited drug cultivation and trafficking that has plagued Colombia for so long and has threatened the stability of the Colombian state itself. But the way that President Bush, given it, he has a predilection to base his foreign policy and bilateral ties and personal relationships. And as we've seen, that the Uribe government increasingly has come under strain of allegations, accusations, indictments related to right-wing paramilitary influence, involvement in his government. Then it's a sober reminder for President Bush that the relationship with Colombia goes far beyond President's personal relationship with Uribe. And I think lastly, just to finish off, I'm sure there's a lot of questions about how this relates to Hugo Chavez. And I think on one level, there's no question that this is not the type of trip that Hugo Chavez would have liked to see. I think he would have much preferred to see all these countries, especially the Democratic leftist ones, telling Bush to get lost. So I think it does demonstrate that Chavez might not nearly be as influential for his ability to kind of determine outcomes as some give him credit for. But at the same time, again, as I pointed out at the beginning of my comments, it's right now that the president's just sort of playing catch-up to demonstrate that he does have these relationships and access in a way that, you know, at this point, given what he had promised for his administration, we should be well beyond. So I'll leave it there, and maybe now we can turn it over to any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Russ. And before we turn it over to questions, to the extent that anyone on the call wishes to ask a question in Spanish and to have an answer in Spanish, both Russ and I are more than happy to do so. And now we can turn it over to questions.
Okay, our first question comes from Jeff Morley from The Washington Post. Please state your question.
Hey, Dan. Wonder if you could quantify those numbers about cutting development assistance and child healthcare, you know, down 25, down 22%. What are the numbers there?
Certainly. The numbers, let me flip here for a second. The development assistance, as we all know, the budget numbers are a little complicated because we're operating under a continuing resolution for all of fiscal year 07 when it comes to foreign assistance numbers. But the overall development assistance numbers in 06, so also in 07, was roughly $262 million. The president's proposal for 08 is just over $197 million. So that's 25% less from 06 and 07 to 08. And then for child survival and health, the 06-07 numbers are $140.8 million, and the 08 proposed number from the president is $107.8 million. So that's 23% less.
$107.8 million.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And what is child survival and healthcare? What does that fund?
It funds a number of programs. Actually, I think one of the programs that the president highlighted yesterday are programs for providing nutritional support for kind of low end. A lot of folks in Latin America obviously are living in poverty, but kind of community-based programs to provide food assistance for families with infants, those sorts of things are included in that. Also, some health health provision items. So it's piecemeal because, again, we're talking about more than 300 million people spread out over the hemisphere and those kinds of money. It's usually focused and has been focused on the poorer countries in the hemisphere. The top recipient, for example, is Bolivia. Is slated to get $11.5 million in 2008 under the president's proposal. The Dominican Republic, as in 2006 and 2007, was a key recipient, getting more than $12 million, slated to only get $7.5 million in 2008. Haiti has been the top destination as the poorest country in the hemisphere in 2006-07, receiving almost $20 million of this kind of assistance and support, slated to get 9% less in 2008 at roughly $18 million. So their basic survival, the provision of basic survival goods and services, if you will.
Our next question comes from David Brooks from La Jornada. Please state your question.
Hi. Shannon, a week ago, Tom Shannon, sort of portrayed this trip as the beginning of a mission to combat another emerging or competitive vision in the hemisphere, and essentially put that the U.S. was backing one vision, and obviously there was another vision that had emerged because democracy and free trade, as he put it, had not delivered the goods, et cetera. I just wanted some comment on whether you think this trip is really about two competing visions, and obviously the subtext there is this trip, in terms of the administration thinking, is it correct and precise enough to say it really is Bush versus Chavez, and that's the competition in the hemisphere? Is that what's really going on here?
I'll take a whack at that and then pass it over to Russ. I think, unfortunately, it's the way that the administration looks at the problem that they're facing today. I think they do see Chavez as some sort of regional threat who presents a competing vision, and that they need to go combat it. And it complicates efforts to go to the region by doing it that way. There's a strong tradition of anti-interventionism throughout the Americas, as we all well know. And to couch U.S. policy as being anti-Chavez or in opposition to or in contrast to places leaders throughout the hemisphere in a box that doesn't really behoove U.S. policy. It doesn't make the advancement of U.S. interests any more it doesn't make it any easier. What is going on is that there's profound political, social, and economic changes going on throughout the hemisphere. The U.S. has important interests in the region, and we need to address those interests because they're important to the United States, not because there's some sort of unified anti-U.S. movement going on in the hemisphere led by Chavez, because that simply doesn't square with the reality of what we see. Chavez's influence outside of Venezuela has been exaggerated, perhaps as much so as his own rhetoric, and focusing on the problem that way, as the administration does, complicates the pursuit of clear U.S. interests. For example, seizing the energy opportunity and reorienting our own economy to one based on renewable fuels is something that we could do much more easily in conjunction with the Brazilians, with regional investments in infrastructure. And we should do that on our own terms for our own reasons, that they have a salutary side effect with regard to Chavez and other oil-dominated economies is a beneficial thing, but it certainly shouldn't be the centerpiece of U.S. policy moving forward. Russ?
Yeah, no, I would just add along Dan's point that it's a sad reflection that it's come to this, that the president, again, given his lofty goals coming into office, is now sort of to touring the region, trying to make the case that the Bolivarian, the Chavez-led Bolivarian revolution is not the way to go. I mean, this should be an easy sell of the idea of the rule of law and democracy, representation. So I think the president is in a hole that he's attempting to dig himself out of, especially given that, and as we all know, Chavez is swollen with oil revenues and has his money to throw around, and this certainly complicates the agenda. You have a lot of governments that, while they privately might not be very enthusiastic about that Chavez, are publicly reluctant to criticize him or to line up behind the United States, just given the standing of the United States right now in the region. So we haven't made it any easier for our allies, for those kind of that are equally wary of the Chavez agenda, to make headway.
If I could add just one additional thought. The administration is, I think, understands the difficulty that they've put themselves in given their obsession of Chavez, and they're trying very hard not to mention his name, trying to allude to as if this isn't what they're about. And that's all well and good until you read the president's speech from yesterday. The ode to Simón Bolívar at the end of that speech yesterday was the most transparent effort to say, no, we own Bolívar, not Chavez.
Right.
I mean, it's so obviously obtuse. It's painful at this point. The lengths to which they're trying to go to say that they're not doing this only because they've been shamed into it by Chavez. But that's exactly where they have found themselves. And that's a long way from where the president was in August of 2000 in Miami when he talked about the centrality of the Americas for his presidency, should he be elected president of the United States.
And now I guess we can add Simón Bolívar to José Martí as where we compete for the legacy mantle of these heroic leaders of independence. So.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Sergio Davila from Folha. Please state your question.
Hi. Actually, my question is for both of you. The first one is it correct to qualify yesterday's initiative as Chavez-inspired or Chavez-like? I mean, sending doctors, training professors, all this stuff reminds me of the Cuban doctors that Venezuela has been using for the last 5 years. Also, Dan said that the initiatives were recycled once. Could you elaborate on that? And my last question is, who do you think is the author of this plan, this yesterday plan?
Russ, why don't you go ahead and I'll follow up.
Okay, sure. I think it certainly struck me the exact same reaction to the president's initiative, that it did sound a little revolutionary, so to speak, given of all the criticism of what Cuba or Venezuela via Cuba or Cuba has been doing in terms of sending doctors throughout the hemisphere. But I think, again, they're attempting to send a signal that the president, unlike what many people believe of him, does have a social orientation and realizes the widespread difficulties throughout the region, and that responses such as this are warranted. Now, in terms of who's responsible for this, it's my sense. Again, that this approach reflects the ascendancy of Tom Channon at the State Department. That kind of efforts to move away from the heated rhetoric to emphasize convergence and shared beliefs in terms of what needs to be done to address the region's challenges. I think this is a response to what were largely counterproductive. Use the term blowback for policy that might have short-term gains, but over the long run, comes back to haunt us. We think of our support of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in the 1980s. We've had from Evo Morales to now, Vince, the Bush administration has had their share of blowback in terms of kind of more imperious policies that over time have appeared to really hurt our standing. I think this is that kind of post-blowback approach to the region, just to kind of focus on the positive, focus on the social, just to show that, unlike what Hugo Chavez says of us, that we're not the boogeyman. And I think there's certainly a strong element of truth in all that. Again, it's just the president, everything that he's done previously has just resulted in the fact that how kind of low the expectations are for this visit.
And to build on that for a moment, I think it's impossible to have read yesterday's speech or to have listened to yesterday's speech and not thought of the Cuban doctors. And not thought of the social programs that Chavez has been promoting in Venezuela and throughout the region. And again, I think it goes, and it's a superficial response to that phenomenon. It's the, we can do that too, so we must be good guys as well, to the extent that people think that Chavez is a good guy in the region. It fails to recognize the unique position of the United States. It fails to tackle the real questions that should be at the center of this trip, that are how do we revolutionize? There's a real opportunity to revolutionize relations in the hemisphere, not by sending the USNS Comfort to various ports of call, but rather by changing the dynamic between the United States and Brazil and changing the dynamic between the United States and Mexico. Ethanol in the first case, immigration in the second case, as issues that can be used, if used boldly, to move the agenda forward in a way that would do far more to counteract whatever influence Chavez may have outside of his own country than these kind of empty symbolic shows. Also, and who's the author? I agree that Secretary Shannon has brought a far more pragmatic approach to dealing with the hemisphere than his ideological predecessors. Or his predecessors who were ideologues. They were actually not his ideological predecessors. But I think there's also a measure of domestic political calculus that can't be discounted here. The president's approach to the hemisphere and his rhetoric with regard to the Western Hemisphere has always had at least one foot in the camp of attempting to appeal to Latino voters in the United States. It's no accident that the speech that he delivered yesterday was to the United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. His party has suffered tremendously in a very important political constituency as a result of the nativist approach that members of Congress have taken with regard to immigration reform. And I think the president, in looking at his own legacy, which at one point looked like it would change the political calculus or dynamic within the Latino community to the betterment of his party, that now very much looks in doubt, and I think part of what we're seeing in this greater openness and greater compassion and understanding of the plight of people living in the hemisphere is actually part of a political calculus meant to resonate within the community here at home.
Great. I just have one follow-up to Dan. You mentioned the recycling of old programs, old initiatives. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, there's nothing particularly. If you look at the fact sheet that the White House put out yesterday describing these new social justice initiatives, they are both retrospective. They look back at what the administration has been doing, and in most cases are repackaging of ongoing, for example, child health initiatives that we've been doing in the hemisphere. There's some new stuff. The fact that the president is going to call for a Western Hemisphere meeting at the White House is a new initiative. That's something you do at the beginning of an administration, not at the end. And there's also the healthcare training center in Panama. If there's money put behind it, would be a new initiative. But in large measure, and this has been done before, the president, when he travels, when he has traveled to the region in the past, they've kind of gathered together their fact sheets or their lists of programs that are already ongoing. Sometimes they've described them in that way, and sometimes they've put new labels on them and said this is our new bold initiative for the hemisphere. So in a lot of ways, this is if you look at the money. Maybe I've been in Washington for too long. But presidents' priorities are set in their budgets, not in fact sheets that are sent out before trips. And there's no new money to speak of suggested in this fact sheet. This is all rearranging initiatives that already exist in the president's budget.
Our next question comes from Jeff Morley with The Washington Post. Please state your question.
For both of you, are any of the Latin Americans inclined to be magnanimous with Bush? I mean, and see interest in, you know, in helping a hand and, you know, laying a path for the future? Or are they more likely to stand up to him?
I think people will be magnanimous toward him. The president of the United States is an important figure, even if he's politically damaged at home. And the relationship, the United States, every country on this trip, save for Uruguay, the U.S. is the largest export market for products from those countries. There are deep connections. One in every 6 Mexicans lives in the United States. 1 in every 10 Guatemalans live in the United States. There are profound connections between the United States and many of the countries that the president is going to visit. So I don't think you'll see open hostility from heads of government with regard to the president. That's not saying much. That's a low bar that we can celebrate or note that there won't be open hostility towards the president. There may be. I think you will have some popular demonstrations, if you will, with regard to kind of the popular sentiment as to the view of the president of the United States. But that's not, unfortunately, distinct to Latin America. The president has done great harm to the U.S. standing in the world, largely as a function of the voluntary war in Iraq and the incidences at Abu Ghraib, at Guantanamo. U.S. standing is far from where it should be. That's true in the Western Hemisphere as well as throughout the world. But there are important relationships here, and there are important interests for all of the countries that the president is visiting vis-a-vis the United States. So I think we'll expect to see a relatively warm dealings with the president. But at the same time, they'll pick up and go visit other people that the president might not want them to visit, and they'll meet with people with Chavez and others who make the president uncomfortable. But that's part of the reality of the Western Hemisphere today, that all the answers don't lie in Washington, and that's not a bad thing. The region is a dynamic place is a good thing. It's good for the region. It's good for the United States in the long term if we understand the proper way to navigate that.
Yeah, I would just add that I think it's helpful, at least for me, to kind of divide the answer to that question into two parts, of one being kind of this democratic left, in this case, Vasquez of Uruguay and Brazil's Lula, and then on the other side of two governments more aligned with the United States, and even more specifically with the Bush administration of Calderon and Uribe. And I think both of us mentioned, definitely is a benefit of President Bush, a benefit for President Bush of him being received, at least apparently warmly, by Democratic leftist leaders. It works the same way the other way around in terms of Lula demonstrating and Vasquez that they can still kind of chart independent foreign policies, but enjoy the favor of Washington, and particularly the Bush administration. Maybe even if you look a little bit more specifically, take an often overlooked, seemingly insignificant country such as Uruguay, that starting with the previous administration and now surprisingly being continued with this democratic leftist President Vasquez, that they are kind of have their own interests that they're calculating in terms of to the United States, hoping to perhaps leverage that a little bit vis-a-vis their fellow Mercosur partners, in particular Brazil and Argentina. So I think we don't want to generalize too much that it's sort of there's a black and a white, or an anti-Bush and a pro-Bush, that you know, all these countries do have their interests. And as Dan mentioned, that the United States is the United States is the United States, and it's a very important market and very important political counterpart, and one that historically has exercised a great deal of influence and leadership in the region. And I think in that sense, you know, both sides these are going to focus on the positive, because there is a lot, especially on trade, that these countries both or you know, both these sides find to be appealing and important.
Our next question comes from Howard LaFranchi from Christian Science Monitor. Please state your question.
Yeah, thanks. The last comment got somewhat to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Maybe
sure.
You could elaborate a little. And that is, to what extent this trip sort of constitutes a sort of dividing of or includes a vision of sort of good countries versus bad countries? I mean, you have you were just talking about Uruguay,
right
across the bay from Argentina.
Right.
Where the president had a very bad experience a year and a half ago. Colombia as opposed to Bolivia. And anyway, to what extent is there that involved? And how is that, you know, is there a sort of dividing in the region as well, or is there a recognition that's happening and that maybe we need to stick together?
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question. I probably should have answered the last part of my last Mexico and Colombia, but I think you're absolutely right that the trip to Mar del Plata in Argentina was an unmitigated disaster. The administration realized immediately that it was a disaster. It paid almost no attention to this critical issue and event of the Summit of the Americas. The U.S. Inspired Summit of the Americas beginning back in Miami in 1994, of course. And I think in some ways because this trip to kind of a redo to show that not only, again, can the president be warmly received in Colombia, where we provide so much aid, or Mexico, a country that has such an interdependent relationship with the United States and has a conservative-leaning government, but also, as was supposed to be the case to an extent with Argentina, that the Brazil the Uruguay that the president does can reach across ideological lines, these other leaders. So in that sense, again, Hugo Chavez, they love there to be a very a wide fault line and further isolate what he would consider kind of puppets of Yankee imperialism. It's the Bush administration's effort to show that that's not the case. I think in reality, it's clearly the relationships go much deeper. There's a much more pragmatic element than that is often reported throughout the region, and I think that's what you're seeing the Bush team really tap into right now. It just works in terms of social programs, what works potentially on energy and ethanol in Brazil, and again, kind of looking at that question of convergence of just what are Latin American interests and our interest in, and where do they come together, and let's really highlight that on the extent that we can, let's show that we can do that with our political counterparts who at least appear to be our ideological adversaries.
To build on that just for a second, I agree that there's clearly a view toward a more pragmatic approach where we're looking for convergence. But the fact that the administration can't help its instincts of framing it all around Chavez, that the president has to go on about Simón Bolívar yesterday, there's certain instincts within, ideological instincts within this administration. They were on full display in the context of the Nicaraguan presidential election last year. Those instincts complicate the ability to take a new approach because they are kind of with a wink and a nod, they're still... And it's better, I guess, to do it with a wink and a nod than directly. But when you're dividing people between the good and the bad, the Argentina bad here and the Uruguay good, you're creating a dynamic that complicates life for Tabaré Vázquez in a way that you shouldn't be doing. Go to Uruguay, because we have a good relationship with the Uruguayans. Don't go to Uruguay because you're not going to Argentina. And that overtone complicates the conduct of U.S. policy and makes things that are going to be rather complex even more difficult to get done because you get the backs up of the kind of the non-interventionist sentiment that runs very deep throughout the Americas.
Thank you.
And I think we are out of questions. If folks have any follow-up questions later in the day for either Russ or myself, they can. And we have recorded the call, and we have a recording of the call. You can all reach out to Vanessa Cárdenas here at the Center for American Progress. Her contact information was on the advisory, but she can be reached at 202-682-1611 or vcardenas@americanprogress.org, and she is the best point of contact for either myself or Russ, or if you need a tape of the call or listen to a recording of the call. And thank you all very much for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Yep, thank you.